got a lot of things to probably talk to you about, but we're going to run into chapter, book of Deuteronomy, chapter 13 and chapter 14 today. All right?
If there arises among you a prophet or a dreamer of dreams, and he gives you a sign or a wonder, and the sign or the wonder comes to pass, of which he spoke to you, saying, "Let us go after other gods, which you have not known, and let us serve them," you shall not listen to the words of that prophet or that dreamer of dreams, for the Lord your God is testing you to know whether you love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. You shall walk after the Lord your God and fear him, and keep his commandments, and obey his voice. You shall serve him and hold fast to him. But that prophet or that dreamer of dreams shall be put to death, because he has spoken in order to turn you away from the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt and redeemed you from the house of bondage, to entice you from the way in which the Lord your God commanded you to walk. So you shall put away the evil from your midst. If your brother, the son of your mother, your son or your daughter, the wife of your bosom, or your friend who is as your own soul, secretly entices you, saying, "Let us go and serve other gods which you have not known, neither you nor your fathers, of the gods of the people which are all around you, near to you or far off from you, from one end of the earth to the other end of the earth. You shall not consent to him or listen to him, nor shall your eye pity him, nor shall you spare him or conceal him, but you shall surely kill him. Your hand shall be first against him to put him to death, and afterward the hand of all the people. And you shall stone him with stones until he dies, because he sought to entice you away from the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, from the house of bondage. So all Israel shall hear and fear, and not again do such wickedness as this among you. If you hear someone of your cities, which the Lord your God gives you to dwell in, saying, 'Corrupt men have gone out from among you and enticed the inhabitants of their city, saying, "Let us go and serve other gods," which you have not known," then you shall inquire, search out, and ask diligently, and if it is indeed true and certain that such an abomination was committed among you, you shall surely strike the inhabitants of that city with the edge of the sword, utterly destroying it, all that is in it, and its livestock, with the edge of the sword. And you shall gather all its plunder into the middle of the street, and completely burn with fire the city and all its plunder for the Lord your God. It shall be a heap forever. It shall not be built again. So none of the accursed things shall remain in your hand, that the Lord may turn from the fierceness of his anger and show you mercy, have compassion on you, and multiply you, just as he swore to your fathers, because you have listened to the voice of the Lord your God, to keep all his commandments which I command you today, to do what is right in the eyes of the Lord your God. 14. You are the children of the Lord your God. You shall not cut yourselves, nor shave the front of your head, for the dead. For you are a holy people to the Lord your God, and the Lord has chosen you to be a people for himself, a special treasure above all the peoples who are on the face of the earth. You shall not eat any detestable thing. These are the animals which you may eat: the ox, the sheep, the goat, the deer, the gazelle, the roe deer, the wild goat, the mountain goat, the antelope, and the mountain sheep. And you may eat every animal with cloven hoofs, having the hoof split into two parts, and that chews the cud among the animals. Nevertheless, of those that chew the cud or have cloven hoofs, you shall not eat, such as these: the camel, the hare, and the rock harax, for they chew the cud but do not have cloven hoofs. They are unclean for you. Also, the swine is unclean for you, because it has cloven hoofs, yet does not chew the cud. You shall not eat their flesh or touch their dead carcasses. These you may eat of all that are in the waters. You may eat all that have fins and scales, and whatever does not have fins and scales you shall not eat. It is unclean for you. All clean birds you may eat, but these you shall not eat: the eagle, the vulture, the buzzard, the red kite, the falcon, and the kite after their kinds, every raven after its kind, the ostrich, the short-eared owl, the seagull, and the hawk after their kinds, the little owl, the screech owl, the white owl, the jackdaw, the carrion vulture, the fisher owl, the stork, the heron after its kind, and the hoopoe, and the bat. Also, every creeping thing that flies is unclean for you. They shall not be eaten. You may eat all clean birds. You shall not eat anything that dies of itself. You may give it to the alien who is within your gates, that he may eat it. Or you may sell it to a foreigner, for you are a holy people to the Lord your God. You shall not boil a young goat in its mother's milk. You shall surely tithe all the increase of your grain that the field produces year by year, and you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place where he chooses to make his name abide, the tithe of your grain and your new wine and your oil, of the firstborn of your herds and your flocks, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. But if the journey is too long for you, so that you are not able to carry the tithe, or if the place where the Lord your God chooses to put his name is too far from you, when the Lord your God has blessed you, then you shall exchange it for money. Take the money in your hand and go to the place which the Lord your God chooses. And you shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires, for oxen or sheep, for wine or similar drink, for whatever your heart desires. You shall eat there before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. You shall not forsake the Levite who is within your gates, for he has no part nor inheritance with you. At the end of every third year shall bring out the tithe of your produce of that year, and store it up within your gates. And the Levite, because he has no portion nor inheritance with you, and the stranger, and the fatherless, and the widow, who are within your gates, may come and eat and be satisfied, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hand which you do.
A lot of stuff here today, and though sometimes it looks like it's relatively simple and go through. The first chapter, verse 13. Now, try to keep in mind who he is talking to, that is Moses, and where the people are heading to. They're heading into a land that has an awful lot of unusual things that God wants cleaned up. And when he has them cleaning up, I'll talk a little bit about that in chapter 7 again. But to look at this thing, you know, when you get in there and you do certain things, now this is what I want you to do. This particular chapter 13 opens up with an unusual statement. A prophet, or a dreamer, or one who gives sign, a message. He has a vision. And lo and behold, it actually occurs. It actually is real. It actually comes to pass. That should be good news, we figure, right? In our world, in our thinking, and in our mind. But we have to look and see what God is looking at and why he is doing this. Now, he says he's not going to kill the dreamer. He's not going to kill the prophet. And even when the prophecy comes true and comes to pass, he's not going to kill him. But if this prophet decides to say, we will worship another Elohim, then God says something, doesn't he? Really heavy stuff here. Now, I'm not saying that you or I should do that. That's not what this chapter is about. This chapter is about the nation of Israel and how the country should rule and operate their society as you're walking into this country. We all know from past history that it didn't necessarily. In fact, we know it did not follow through on a lot of cases. And this is one of them that did not follow through. But the warning has been given. Now, it's up to the people of Israel to carry out something. What are they supposed to carry out? Devarim Elohim. That's what's expected of them. Now, do you think God put too much on them? No? Anybody else have any input that God, did God put too much upon them? All right, let's put it this way. If you were required to do that, what would you do? What if you're one who is closer to you than anybody else? Remember David and Jonathan? What if there is a Jonathan who was that close and then told David, let's worship another Elohim? Because what I have done, it happens, and it happens, and what I do, it just comes to pass. Would that be a heavy thing for David to kill Jonathan? Now, this is a serious matter. This is the reason why this is written. The way of God is not a piece of cake. It is hard. What did the Messiah say? This way is wide, broad, simple. Everybody goes that way, right? No, he says it's narrow and very, very difficult. Then I look at this chapter and I'm saying, wow, that is a heavy thing to take someone's life, especially one who is closer to my soul than anybody else. I'm not supposed to hide him, not protect him. I'm not supposed to let anybody know about it. I have to be the very first one to do it. You don't think that would trouble me? I'm sorry. I'm a man. I'm a human being. I'm also weak. I'm also Richard. Yes, it would trouble me. Let's put it this way. If I had to do that to David, that would just tear me inside out. Would it be too much? I have to do it. I should feel pain, agony, sorrow, sadness, not hatred, envy, and glad that he's dead. You know how heavy that stuff is? That's pretty heavy, right? Hey, here God giving them a really heavy message, right, which is right in the very beginning of this thing. And I'll tell you, I'm looking at it from a human point of view. Yeah, it's hard. But why would he want me to do that? Verse 3. To know whether or not I love my God with all my heart, with all my soul. I love God! Wait a minute. God says, oh, you do? Well, I'm going to raise up a man, and that man's very, very close to you and very dear to you, and I'm going to have him prophesy, and it will come to pass, and he'll be well known and well appreciated and well respected, and he's going to tell you to go worship another God. I'm going to test your reins. We don't look at it that way, do we? Because God never does that to us, right? Well, maybe not this heavy, but this is a very heavy thing to do. And so it looks like a simple thing to do inside when it's just written down, but internally we have to ask ourselves why. Before the flood, who was killing everybody? Carrying out executions. God was had to do the job. And he turned it over to somebody. Turned it over to whom? Noah. He said, from now on, you, man, will do this. Why'd you pass the book? Do you think it's always pleasant for him to have to wipe out people? Y'all think it's always joyous to him that he gets to kill people? No, it doesn't. So how you get this feeling of God? Now, God wants you to know about him. Remember, this book of Deuteronomy and all of the Torah, I didn't go into the prophets, it's telling us about God, what God thinks, what God does, what God acts and institutes. And when he does these things, we're supposed to figure out and say, oh, that's heavy, isn't it? It's nice when we have a wonderful thing. We can love God, go to the feast and have parties and all that kind of stuff. It's great, great. And God blesses us because we respond to him. But I'll tell you this much. None of us in this room has ever been tested like Job. But he passed. Lost everything, but he passed. Lost his family, but he passed. Pretty heavy stuff. So God is introducing to the nation of Israel, this new generation, a very major, overwhelming responsibility. But they must do what is right in his own eyes. We read that in the 12th chapter, right? This 13th chapter, the 12th chapter, he says, you will now do what is right in the eyes of God. Along comes this 13th chapter. Ooh. That's pretty big, don't you think? So we brush through the 13th chapter, and we go to this other spot where there is a particular city, he says, that, let's say after a while, a city, I'm not naming the city, but let's just say a city where fellow Americans are at. And they lived there for hundreds of years. And they've been a very profitable city and beneficial to the rest of the community and maybe the rest of the country. And along comes this city and it starts doing things and worshiping other Elohims. Now in reality, what are we supposed to do? Tolerate it. Well, because we are America, we're not House of Israel. On our House of Israel, what are they supposed to do? Man, they got to search out diligently to find out if it is true and don't make a single mistake about it. If there are people within that city, they better act as Lot did. Get out of town. And the object is to destroy the city, burn everything. But they have this wonderful building there, which we can use it for our services. Burn it to the ground. Leave it a heap forever. L.A.
Okay, if somebody came up to me and said, let's go after another god, which I haven't known, let us go serve him. My immediate reaction would be no, because that's so blatant. But in verse 5, it says, to entice you from the way in which the Lord your God commanded you to walk, so that you would put away evil from your midst. That if a person enticed me away from the way in which the Lord my God commanded me to walk, that's an easier enticement, since it was put that way. It's the same thing. But if somebody said, oh, let's go worship Astarte.
But what does enticement mean?
Well, to pull me. But if somebody's making me give up the way God said.
There are more fun ways to worship God than this.
Exactly.
Let's have a party and worship God this way.
Yes.
Uh-oh. What happens?
Exactly.
Okay.
Same trip.
Same picture, same story, same way. Okay? Any more comments about the 13th chapter? I find a very fascinating chapter. Why it's led at this particular place. Because there's something in the 4th, 7th chapter that we're supposed to do to the nations. But now we're talking about when you're in there, this is going to take place. What I want you to do is this. Pretty heavy stuff. I'm talking not the seven nation peoples, talking about fellow Israelites. Fellow Israelites, fellow brethren, fellow people, fellow citizens who keep the holy days, who keep the Sabbath, who worship God. And why would a prophet want to be famous? Pride of life. Now the 14th chapter. I don't have my right glasses on. It's already 2:30? 2:35, I guess. All right, I'm throwing this out to you. Ye are the children of Elohim. You are the children of Yahuwah, your Elohim. You shall not cut yourself, nor make yourself bald between your eyes for the dead. All right. What on earth is that talking about? Now, it doesn't say you can't be bald and cut your hair and be bald. Don't do it for the dead. Now, what actually transpired here in Israel, and actually the Israelites started doing this for the dead. Oh, weird. You know, no, I'm not going to go there today. Forget it. I'm in the Torah. I'm going to stay there right now. Try to explain a little bit. Now, to try to find some background. Now, in that particular area of the world, during the time of the Israelites, those seven nations did certain things. And one of the certain things they did is cut themselves and beat themselves up for a dead person. That was their way of wailing for the dead. You know, in Jewish world, the Bible says, rip your clothes, it's about as far as you ever go for someone who's dead, and you're mourning over it. That's as far as it goes. Well, in that society, in that country which they entered into, no, they actually did more than that. They cut themselves and beat themselves for the dead. Now, I remember some years ago, there were, I think, I might be mistaken, in the Philippines when Christianity first started coming in there, and they started thinking about the Messiah and the cross, the death of the Messiah, that the Philippines, because of their tradition, would take a whip and beat themselves for the mourning of the death of Jesus. I don't remember if they cut their hair short or not. I don't remember. But that God says, don't do that. But they did it anyway in the house of Israel. The closest thing I've been able to find, okay, Jeremiah talked about a couple of things. But you remember in 1 Kings 18, where Elijah and the prophets of Baal. And he's out there and had these two altars. Remember the two altars? Some of you remember the history? Both are made the same alike, but one was drenched with water. Lots of water. Got soaking wet. But they could not light either one of them. Remember that? Well, the prophets of Baal, Elijah said unto the prophets of Baal, choose you one bullock for yourself and dress it first. For ye are many, and call on the name of your Elohim, but put no fire under it. And they took the bullocks which was given them, and they dressed it, and called on the name of Baal from morning until noon, saying, Baal, hear us, but there is no voice, nor anything to answer. And they leaped up on the altar which was made. And it came to pass at noon that Elijah mocked them, saying, cry aloud, for he is an Elohim. Either he is walking or he is pursuing and doing something else. He's on a journey, Brutel. And it says now, and they, the prophets of Baal, began to cut themselves after the manner which knives with knives and lashes. So this is a common thing in that country. This is during the time of Elijah, many years later. And so worshiping Baal, you would do that. Now I'm trying to move myself into modern times. Do you know of any group of people who would do harm to themselves for their God? Yeah. In Jeremiah, we won't go there, Jeremiah 40 and 41, they're talking about where the people of Israel, they came out from Shechem, the city of Israel, and they came out and they were cut their hair, bald their hair, and cut their bodies for the dead that happened to Shechem. And one of the Israelites, his name was Ishmael, not the one you're thinking, oh, they're way back during Abraham's time, took and slew them, killed them. Just according to what the prophet says. It says there in the book of Deuteronomy. You don't do that. So all the way till Jeremiah, they were doing it. That tells you a little bit more about it. Now, Leviticus 19, there are some things that help me to understand a little bit more about the baldness and even of the shaping of the beard and all that kind of stuff. And it says, 19th chapter, verse 21, thou shalt not round the corners of your head, neither shalt mar the corners of thy head. You shall not make any cuttings in your flesh for the dead, nor print any marks upon them. I am Yahuwah. So rounding of the corners wasn't worshiping of anything like the sun. It was for the purpose of the dead. Don't ask me. I wasn't there. I have no idea. I've not found a historian to tell me to explain that because most historians don't know themselves.
Interesting, because there are people who are shaving their heads now, even within the church, for people who are dying of cancer.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
No. They sell their hair. First of all, some of them will just shave their head. Women as well as men, and some of them will give their hair to companies to make wigs, but some of them just do it.
I've only heard on television where a woman does have long hair, she cuts, but not bald, she cuts enough just so that they could give it to someone, a girl or boy is bald.
Well, I've known people who have actually buzzed, and the women. In the church and out of the church.
For the dead or the dying, whatever you want to put it, yes.
In sympathy for them.
In sympathy, yeah.
To walk along with them. Yes. But for the dying, I mean,
and also
then
in,
I suppose it's not the same thing.
In Leviticus 21, verse 5, it's talking about the very same thing. You shall not make baldness upon thy head, neither shall you shave off the corners of the beard, nor make any cuttings in thy flesh. Now, all of a sudden, I know what it means for the dead. I don't quite understand all that. I'm not going to say I understand it. And maybe you need to look at it yourself and find out. But he says, why? Verse 2, for thou art a holy people. All right, stop. I don't want you to do this. Either in remembrance of or honor of or whatever it is. For the dead. That's a big message. Why would he say this in the first verse and the 14th chapter and turn around and say this, you are a holy people unto Yahuwah thy Elohim. Who has chosen you to be a treasure, a special, a jewel, people to himself above all the nations of the earth. That's an interesting statement. What do you think he's saying? It's open. It's open. What do you think he's saying?
The word holy means set apart. So if people observe that the pagans or the people of the land do things a certain way and they see this other people that are totally the opposite, they are setting themselves apart from the practices of the people around them. It's to separate themselves from the way the pagans do their worship.
Okay, keep one more thing. Okay, Dave, I got Bill.
They're also, when they kept the dietary laws, they were healthy and things like that that the heathen weren't doing. And they were wondering, it's meant to, so they'd look at the children of Israel and say, their God must be doing something for them because we're sick and they're healthy.
Okay. I want to go.
Draw close to God. God promised that he would reveal his secrets to us. So there's absolutely no necessary need for us to act like that because we know better. And when we know better, we do better.
But these people didn't know better. But he told them before. All right?
They had those things that God...
They didn't know that until he told them. They entered into this land and now they're understanding, he wants to separate them from something else. What were the people in the land of the seven nations doing that was different than what God wanted them to do? Their God is a God of the something, and this was the God of something else. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You err not knowing Scripture. What did he say? God of the what?
God of the
dead. He's not the God of the dead. He is a God of the living. Israel, you are my people. You are special people. You are a jewel to me. I am your God. I am the God of living. You have life. I give you life. Think about life. Walk in life and truth and honesty. Don't walk in death. Wages of something leads to something else. Leads unto death. The world they were had to clean up was a world of tremendous amount of living in death. They were dying people, even though they were born. Dying, they're living in death. Okay, it's like we always heard the statement of the gray area. Gray area. There's either the light or darkness or gray area. Well, in the gray area, the one thing bad about being in the gray area, you don't know if the person's coming out of darkness into light or going from light into darkness. That doesn't work with God, right? Doesn't work with God. Yes, Anne, Ellie.
Well, also, it goes back to in chapter 13, to entice you from the way in which the Lord your God commanded you to walk. You're not supposed to do that. And it's really easy for somebody to say, that's Old Testament. Or, God doesn't mean that now. Or God's mean. Or any of us, a whole bunch of stuff. Okay. We're not supposed to be enticed away from that.
I just find that what I'm seeing, what I believe, what I see with her, Israel is supposed to represent the city of the nation of life, not the nation of dead or death. But in order for them to have, they have to learn to obey the commandments, the statutes, the judgments. Because that will give them understanding and wisdom and great understanding. Now, the rest of chapter 14, we won't have to go through every one of those things because we kind of already know what that means about what is what to eat, what you're not to eat, and different names of different animals. Some of your translation will have different words, different places there. But I want to drop down now to a very interesting statement here. I hope I get through in the next few minutes. If I can't, I will carry it on next week. Verse 22. What do you find odd, if anything, from that?
Haven't been able to wrap my mind around the three-year thing, putting it away and bringing it out every 3 years. That's one thing I have not been able to wrap my mind around
yet. Nice. Piran, you had a hand up there.
You shall tithe the entire crop of your planting, whereas the tithe was always represented by a tenth.
Okay.
The produce year by year.
Okay. Now, we'll get to the next verse of 23. Very fascinating thing about that verse, right? Now it says what you're going to do with it. And you must go. You shall eat before Yahweh, thy Elohim, and the place. Remember we talked about place before? Which he shall choose to place his name there. The tithe of thy corn, the tithe of thy wine, and the tithe of thy oil, and the firstlings of thy herd and of thy flock, that thou may learn to fear thy Elohim always. Got that. Now let's continue on for just a minute. Keep in mind, verse 22 does not tell you what it really tells you in English. I'll give you that big hint right now. Alright? Now he said, now if that's too far for you, verse 24, well, this is what you could do, you know, as I expand, we say, I'll expand your borders, or the place, you know, you could do this. You could choose your own place. Really? So it says? Not really. Verse 25. And thou shalt turn it into money, and bind up the money in thy hand, and shall go unto the place where Yahuwah, thy Elohim, shall choose. Okay, so we'll sell our product. We'll sell the tithe, first things, and all that. So that's what we'll do, right? We'll take everything we got. We'll sell, include the firstlings. All that kind of stuff, right? Just take money, right? Is that what it says? Keep careful what it says, you know. And thou shalt bestow the money for whatever thy soul lusts after, for ox or for the wine, sheep, wine, so on and so forth. And he said, now, and the Levite that is in thy gate, verse 27, thou shalt not forsake him, for he has neither a part or inheritance with you. Now, verse 28. At the end of 3 years, thou shalt bring forth the tithe of increase, the tithe of thine increase in the same year. Thou shalt lay it up within thy gates. Okay. That's kind of confusing here, isn't it? Now we're running into this third year, or the tithe in the third year. Now, as we keep on going, he tells us in the book of Deuteronomy, remember what says Deuteronomy says there? I'll read it here quickly. 12th chapter. When there be a place where Yahuwah Elohim has chosen to cause the name to dwell there, thither you shall bring all I command you, your whole offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, and your heave offering. Heave offering, your choice of vows. And ye shall rejoice before Elohim, and ye and your sons and your daughters, your maidservants, your menservants, and so on and so forth, Levites at your gate. And take heed that thou shalt offer not thy whole offering in every place. Oh, it's only one place. But at the place, well, Elohim or Yahuwah has chosen for thy tribe to offer the whole offering. verse 15 of 12th chapter. Notwithstanding, you can zivach, or kill, any the flesh of thy gate, wherein thy soul lusts after, according to the blessings of Yahuwah thy Elohim, which has given to you. Clean and unclean may eat thereof, as the robach and as the hart. Remember that? Okay. Now, does that give us, or give them, Israelites, the license then that they could go ahead and kill the vow offering? No. They could kill the free will offering. No. They can kill the firstborn of the flock. No. They could kill whatever they want. No. So now we have to ask ourselves a question. He says, now I'm going to tell you what I want you to do about what's called the tithe. What is a tithe? Of what? Of corn? Of grape juice or grape or wine and of oil. And there's also one more tithe, which we'll learn later on in the book of Deuteronomy goes on. There's a tithe of the sheep and a tithe of the, but it's counted differently, isn't it? Or is it? It's the last one in the series of 10. Remember? If you don't have 10, then God doesn't have it. It doesn't belong to him. It's still yours. So now he says something about this particular thing. As we go back now, and let's take another look of the of what we have here in Deuteronomy, in the 12th chapter, trying to get this thing packed. What verse was I on? So now we read in the 14th chapter, they come across as making a null, almost appear to be a null and void of all that was in the 12th chapter. But not really. We have to be careful separating these words of God and find out what he really has to say. Especially when the third year of tithing comes around. It seemed like we'll just make it null and void. Well, that's not truly what it says. Tithe of thy increase the same year. Ye shall lay up within thy gates. What gates? What are gates?
Town where you live.
There was a man during Abraham's time. It was his niece. He was sitting at the of. You mean there was a gate there? Really? Okay. I mean, every house, you have a fence and you have a gate there? Or was it a gate of the city? Gate of the city. Now, does that mean there's only one gate? Well, true. But let's put it in our modern terminology. We have in our county, Sonoma County, we have a what's called a capital. A city that's the capital of the county. What city is the capital of the county? Santa Rosa, Sonoma, Sacramento. Sacramento. What? Okay, I'll make it simple. Let's say the city of Santa Rosa. Let's make it there in the city of Santa Rosa. Where is the gate? Who's sitting at the end of Roland Park? Is anybody there sitting in that gate? Anybody sitting in the gate?
No.
Where are the gates?
The boundaries.
At the city hall. You go to the center of the city hall. That's the gate to the city. So that means the jurisdiction of the, as a Hebrew phrase, the gate does not refer to a real physical gate. Yes, it can, but when it comes to cities, it's talking about a town area or an agricultural area. There is a central location where everything is being brought. And in agricultural world, it's called the threshing floor. Ever heard of threshing floor before? It's not in your backyard. You take your grain, you take it to the threshing floor, and somebody there at the threshing floor will do the job. Okay, it's a gateway for the threshing floor, or for your wheat. Do you understand what I'm saying so far? So it's not that difficult to understand. Now, in the third tithe year, he said, now, what's this what I want you to do? Instead of taking it, quote, end quote, be careful about this word, we'll get to the word later, and not go to the Feast of Tabernacles, don't go to Passover, don't go to this, on the third year, you just I'll keep it right there in the city. But it's not for you. It's not for you. You can't touch it. Oh, wait a minute. But you commanded me in the book of Deuteronomy, 12th chapter, every year you shall, year in and year in and year out, go to the place where I have placed my name, and you will there take your tithe, you will take and you eat your wine, you take all that wonderful things, and you will celebrate and rejoice before me, so says Yahuwah. Wait a minute. How can we do the two things? What is he talking about?
How about you get to take a neighbor, someone who could not ordinarily afford to go, but you take that third tithe and you invite them to come up with you?
That's not what the Torah says. It says take it to the gates. You don't have permission to choose. Wait a minute. According to the Torah, you don't have a permission to choose who gets the money. It's the people who sit at the gate. They're the ones. That's the society. I'm looking at ancient Israel and what he said for a nation to do. Not individuals, as we live in America, but a nation. Understand, God was building a nation. He wasn't building a believer here, believer there, scattered. No, he was building an entire tribe of Israel. All 12 tribes were unto him a particular people, very blessed people, and holy unto him to do a function, to do a job. We're learning what God wants in the Torah for them to do. Did they do that in their real world? No. Yes.
Is that like what happened in Ushpizim when they were chosen to receive? Because there was a place that people had brought the money and then they were recipients of it? In the movie.
Oh, I'm trying to figure. The Bible. Did that work on the Bible? I don't remember reading that in the Bible. Okay, before we talk about I got you talking about. I'm sorry. I'm kind of a weird people. I'm not much of a movie rememberer. I remember very few movies. Right, but I'm not. Since I don't remember what the movie is all about, to tell you the honest truth, I couldn't tell you say yes or no to the thing if it's a good example. Well, I'm not talking about Israel here now. We're talking about they're going to the Promised Land. It's now when you're in there and you are to be a people to be holy unto me. And you eliminated seven nations. We'll get to that. I don't think I get to that at all. Got to cut it short. You got to learn something about seven. All right. I'll make a long story short. We have a problem here. Let's turn to again. Remember I told you find out what a gate is, right? You understand that? When is that third year? When does the third year start? When we want it to start? Does it start when we decide it's going to start? Or we make the decision it's going to be now? We're not listening to Devarim and Elohim, are we? Yes?
Is it tied to the seventh year after, or the third year after the Jubilee?
Yeah, no, that's within it.
I mean,
it's within it. There are two series of three. Listen very carefully. Leviticus 25. Yahuwah spoke unto Moshe on Mount Sinai, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when ye come into the land, because they hadn't gone there yet, right? But now they're entering in. 40 years later now, here comes the command that it will give you. you have, I give you, then you shall the land keep a Sabbath unto Yahuwah. 6 years thou shalt sow thy field, 6 years thou shalt prune thy vineyard, and gather in the fruit of the vineyard that year as well as the crop. But on the seventh year shall be a Sabbath to a rest unto Yahuwah, or to the land rather, a Sabbath for Yahuwah, that you shall neither sow nor take or gather in from the vine. Oh, no wine that year. No label on it says, made in first year, second year, third, sixth year. No wine made in the seventh year. That's right. No wine made in the seventh year. No label says, the seventh year. No, it didn't exist. I'm funny on that comment. Anyway. And it's the Sabbath of the land. Well, on that Sabbath year, land, it shall be meat for you, for thy and thy servant, thy maidservant, and so on and so forth, and the strangers of the gate. But you are not to harvest it. Oh, wait a minute. If I can't harvest it, therefore you shall, verse 18, therefore you shall do my statutes, my commandments, and do them as you dwell within them, and the land shall yield her fruit. And he says, now, wait a minute, what are you going to eat in the seventh year? Well, come on, you're going to eat in the seventh year. Well, okay, complain. And he says, okay, you are not to either sow it, nor are you to gather it in. So if you're on the seventh year, let's say you got your garden out there, and you always picked all the tomatoes and picked all the fruit, picked all the carrots. On the seventh year comes along, and you like to have a tomato. And this thing is full of tomatoes. Don't gather them in. Just take the tomato you want that day for that day. Leave the rest. What happens when the rest is left? They rot and go back in the ground again. And it nourishes the land, and the land gets its place of rest. Because rest means, in terminology here, of it's refreshed. It's renewed. It's allowed to recover from the pain and the agony for 6 years that we wait upon it, okay? Or that God said we could do that, okay? Now, what a curious thought. This cycle of 7 years, there is a tithe of grain, a tithe of the vine each year. There's no tithe during the seventh year. You can't tithe it. Nothing is given to God in the seventh year from the grain or the wine. Does that make sense to you? You can't tithe it because you don't bring it in. You can't get. If you gather it in to give God 10, you have now violated the commandment of Devarim Elohim.
In the third year at the gate, in the city.
We'll get to that. But we're talking here about this on the sixth. He's talking about the sixth and seventh year, how to do that. But we'll get to there. You're correct on one point. I want to add that to the point. I want to go a little farther here. There, one was allowed to eat of it, but I gather it to store it for any reason whatsoever in the seventh year, right? But there comes a problem. Of course, he says, "I will bless a great blessing." Now, in these 7 year cycles, year number one, harvest, and bring in the oil and all that kind, and year number two, bring in, you go to the feast, you have all the wonderful things, and year number three now, but you're still supposed to go to the feast, but how you do this, well, it's all going to go someplace else instead of you. Does it all go there? That's the question you have to ask yourself. I'll answer your question in a minute. The eighth year, which is really the beginning of the next 7 year cycle, he says, and that you will partake of the fruit of the eighth year in the ninth year. Because you're sowing it, you're growing it, but it's not produced yet. Oh, man. That's a long time. No food, no. Then comes the third year, again in that cycle. And the tithe, let's go back here. I've got to explain this to you now, all right? What did I say? Deuteronomy, verse 22? Was 22? Yes. Now I know that there are at least two people, one, two, three, four people in this room who've heard of this phrase, but they did not know what it really meant. What it says here is this: to give a tithe of your tithe in the third year. Tithe of a tithe. Have you heard of tithe of a tithe? That's how church organizations get it. You heard of tithe of a tithe? But it wasn't to be given to the gates. It was taken by the organization, who ran the organization. So now we have a tithe of a tithe. Now, this introduction of a tithe and a tithe is clarified as we continue on the verse 20, the 48th verse. At the end of the 3 years, thou shalt bring forth the tithe of thy tithe increase in the same year, and lay it up for within thy gates. So, let's do it on a monetary system, since we live in a monetary world. Let's suppose you make $50,000 a year. And you take a tithe of that. What is it? $5,000 a year. So every year, for 3 years, it's $5,000, $5,000, $5,000. But in the third year, you're supposed to take a tithe of that. How much is that? $500. Where'd it go? To the gatekeepers. They are to obey the law. What are the gatekeepers supposed to do with that? In precise order. In the precise order. Who gets it first? I'll tell you, it's very important that you pay attention to what's being said. Sorry, what? The Levite, first. Stranger, second. Fatherless, third. Widow, last. In thy gates and thy city where thou dwell. Every city was to handle their own. Now, what does that mean? That means that if you gave your $500 to the gates within your city, they are to look for, in that city, that territory they're in, for the Levite. They're not supposed to find it in New York, in L.A., or some poverty-stricken place somewhere on the face, in their own town, in their own area. That's how you take care of your own. That's a biblical terminology, right? So when it comes to the point when it comes to this tithing of the tithe and the tithe, it really is a fund in the third year. Now, after a while, I think, if everybody gave $500, that's quite a bit. That's enough to support the Levite, the stranger. What are they supposed to do with it? They're supposed to do the very same thing you're supposed to do. What are you supposed to do with yours? What? Go to the feast. Keep the feast. That you learn to fear the Lord. So Levi gets to go. The stranger, the one who's new, walked into your town, loves your area, wants to live there, has no idea what it's all about. He gets to go, or they get to go. And the fatherless, they get to go. And the widow, they get to go. Within thy gates, and shall eat and be satisfied.
We don't have that system today. We have what we call taxes.
We have a system called.
We pay taxes to take care of the poor and the fatherless and the strangers.
Really? Really? If I make $50,000 a year, I get $500 United States government, do you think it really goes where it's supposed to go?
No.
No, come on. We don't live in that society. Nowhere near do we come that close. Not even a dime close. I can't even compare it. One's a lie, and one, this is the truth. Okay? One's a phony God, the other one's a real God. Now, in the seventh year is a fascinating year. Twice as much is given in the sixth year. Twice as much in the sixth year. Not the third year, just the sixth year to handle the tithe and the tithe and everything in the seventh year. And also into the eighth year or the beginning of the first year of the cycle. Right? The first year, you have no crop. Second year, you have crop. Third year, you give a tithe and a tithe. Hope you understand what I'm saying so far? Not a difficult thing to understand. Now, I know there's controversy about a tithe and a tithe. I mean, a lot of people really believe it shouldn't go where it goes. But I'm just reading what it says. Now, an awful lot believe there is one tithe, two tithes, three tithes. Fine. A lot of believe there's three tithes. Give 30% of income. That's fine. If you want to do that, that's your job. I don't find it scripturally. But it's been around for thousands of years. Literally thousands of years. Even some of the commentaries, one of the famous ones, can't remember the name, but in 1880, whatever it was, and he says, he strongly preaches and teaches that there was a three tithe year, three tithes, full 30%. Also taught that way in a lot of Jewish synagogues and Jewish beliefs. They believe there's 30%. I can't find a script, because the book does not talk about anything else than a tithe. Period. That's all it talks about. 10% of something. Now, there is, by the way, a tithe of the grain, which is different than the tithe of the wine. Because you can't measure them the same way, right? One is liquid. The other one's solid. Different weighing measurements. What was a weighing measurement of the grain? What was it called? Omer. What's the weighing measure of wine? Hin, or the hein. Two different measuring devices. We have the very same thing in our world, don't we? Nothing changes. An ounce of wheat is different than an ounce of water. The measurement is entirely different. All right. I have no more to say, and I'm quite surprised I got through this thing. I didn't think I was going through it today. Any comments?
You're looking better.
Yeah, I'm looking better. Well, I get all wound up too. Now I'm probably going to conk out here after a while. The only thing I want to try to keep you in mind is, though it looks like this story that we're going through is telling us what's going to happen to Israel, because the book of Joshua begins the entering in.